Hi, Steve Addison here for the Movements Podcast, the podcast for people who want to multiply disciples and churches everywhere. Today we're somewhere in the Middle East and we're talking to Rick about multiplying disciples and churches in a war.
Going back to college, I actually chose to follow Jesus there and pretty soon got connected with some people who just, first and foremost, they did mobilization to the nations. They really cast a lot of vision for me. Whole parts of the world, unlike America, that just have no believers. If someone had a dream or a vision of Jesus, they could go ask all their friends, family, and coworkers, and they wouldn't find a single follower of Jesus. That vision cast, along with, you know, reading things like Revelation 7, 9, and 10, and just you see it throughout all the Bible. There was a lot of vision given to me, and then a few basic like tools. Let's look at your Oikos map. Let's also make sure you're equipped to share the gospel. So the tool I learned at the time was three circles. I heard a lot of stories about movement, and I was around a lot of people who were excited about movement. They knew a lot about movement. They knew some movement principles. And I think being equipped early on with a few just essential tools, you know, in terms of movement, I had the vision, but I didn't really have a clear strategy for it. I had something like a movement soup where I'm taking different movement principles from different movement strategies, and maybe even some principles from people who've never seen churches planted before. I apply this overseas, somehow movement's going to happen without at the same time being coached or informed by anyone who's actually planted churches. Now, 6 or 7 years after college, I just started to really question, you know, if my vision is to see churches multiply, I haven't planted one single church. Is my strategy really working? And thankfully, at the same time, I had a teammate, James, who was living in the same country. I remember a few times randomly getting connected to him. One was through the harvest. We happened to be trying to share the gospel with the same family at the same time. Like James, he has a lot of experience planting churches. He's done it in America. He's done it in Lebanon. Why don't I learn from him? And slowly but surely, like, you know, one day he's just like, look, dude, if you want to learn from me, just join me. I will open up my schedule. We will go pursue part of town together. If I have any ministry things or coaching I need to do, you're more than welcome to come with me. I just finished up Arabic at the time, so he didn't have to translate for me. I was like, I can't turn this opportunity down. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm actually seeing someone who is doing the vision, or at least a lot further along in the vision than what I am. So I started following James around and learning from him and getting coached by him. Within a few weeks of that, actually, of me like spending pretty much all day every day with James, we had just gone prayer walking in a pretty sensitive part of town. It just didn't go super well. Like, we had boldly shared the gospel, and there were multiple people that were quite upset about it, and we kind of had to run away as a mob started to form around us. So I felt shaken. I'm like, I've tried prayer walking before a lot of times, and never have I had an experience like that. My teammate James is like, as we're driving away, he's like, hey, I need to get home. I'm out of time, but I'm going to drop you off at a meeting with an American and a local Lebanese guy. And the Lebanese guy wants training. Wants discipleship. And that's all I knew. So I'm like asking James, I'm like, tell me exactly what I need to do. Up until this point, I still kind of had this movement suit. For me, discipleship had always been, okay, you want to follow Jesus? Like, come with me to my church. Come with me to like, come join my church. Even the city I live in, half of the city is Muslim. The southern suburbs is Shia Muslim. And then the east is Christian. You can get your disciples plugged into an evangelical church in the eastern part of the city. But in the west and the south, they don't even dare step into any kind of church. If you want them to get plugged into a legacy church, you have to move them across town. And they have to risk their lives just walking into a building. There are no legacy churches in West Beirut or South Beirut because they can't build there. They can't reach there. Going back to this meeting, there's this American guy who spoke no Arabic and Lebanese man named Abud, about my age. Abud speaks no English. This American guy had no way to communicate to Abud, but he led to Abud a few years prior to Jesus through a translator. And Abud chose to follow Jesus. He got baptized. And there were some more traditional ministries that were like, hey, come to our Christian part of town. And we'll give you discipleship for 6 months. And he never quite felt comfortable with that. He's like, hey, I just can't leave my part of town and go join an openly Christian ministry. Like, that's just, he's from Northern Lebanon, comes from a very strict Sunni background. I sat down with him and I'm just like, hey, like, this is the Great Commission. Jesus commands us to like go make disciples of all nations. We actually did Oikos map, where I actually drew out, Abud, here's your name in the middle. Tell me five people who are close to you, but far from Jesus. And on that list was his wife, his best friend, his closest sibling, and a few other people. I'm like, great, like, you've been a believer for a few years. What have you already shared with these people about Jesus? And he said, not a single one. Not even my wife knows I follow Jesus. In my mind, I'm thinking like, you know, he's already not sharing. I doubt he's going to be very fruitful. James just encouraged me. He's like, hey, just follow up with him. Like, read a few, go through discipleship the way we do discipleship, which for discipleship, we read through a list of a story set called The Commands of Christ. And just each time train him in something like a practical way to share his life story, because he's a believer, and to also share the gospel. Over the coming weeks, like, we would slowly read through some of these basic commands of Jesus. And one of them was just how to pray. I had assumed that Abud at least knew how to pray. And one of the craziest things, he's like, I've never actually learned how to pray before. And now just reading the passage about Jesus giving us the Lord's Prayer is the first time I've been taught anything about praying. Over the next few weeks, we just continued this, and I took out his Oikos map again. I just had a picture of it on my phone. I'm like, okay, well, here's your wife. Here's like your sister. Here's your best friend. Here's a few other people. Like, have you been able to make any steps other than let's just pray for them? He actually took out a pen and redrew his Oikos map. He's like, at the cafe I go to, I've just been sharing with everyone I know. And I've shared the gospel with these six guys, and the sixth guy wants to get baptized. Less than a month, Abud went from never sharing his faith, never praying, never doing anything, to now, like, he's praying, he's sharing his faith. We ended up baptizing that guy the same day he told me. Everything you need to disciple is in this book. Pretty soon, of course, Abud, he ran into persecution. Someone tried to take his life because he had shared with the wrong person. He was mostly sharing with Syrian refugees in West Beirut at the time. A lot of Syrian refugees come into Beirut. They live very transient lives here. Like, they will oftentimes move around, and they come here and they have fairly broken oikos. Like, they'll always have like a cousin or friend from school that's around them. But for the most part, the bulk of their oikos, the bulk of their relationship circles, they're not here in Lebanon. They're still in Syria, or maybe they're in another country like Turkey or Europe. Over a year or two, like, we just like pursued these Syrian dudes. Abud, even though he's Lebanese technically, his mother is Syrian, and he just felt a close connection to them. He actually kind of felt like they were the safest people to share with. Still up until this time, he had not shared with his wife that he's a believer. He made disciples. He baptized a few guys. Unfortunately, like, with that transit lifestyle, some Syrians would go back to Syria, or because they got deported, or they had to like go visit family, or even when they went to go back and visit, they got put in mandatory military service, and others would travel and go somewhere else. And some people just leave Beirut and go to another part of Lebanon. They wouldn't even leave the country. So it's just like this constant turnover. Yeah, Abud would win someone to faith. He would baptize them. He would start to disciple them, and then he'd just disappear. It was about a year of that, and we started to hit a lot of traction too, when I think it takes a lot of time to help a local here in Lebanon go from, hey, my goal is to share with every single person, to like, my goal is to actually train people who will share. It's a big step for Arabs. I think part of me not knowing the culture that well, learning these basic tools for the first time, not having any prior experience planting churches, it took a long time with me and Abud to try to teach them this principle. After explaining to them, like, hey, if you invest in three people, and they invest in three people, and they invest in three people, in a couple of years, you can reach your part of your neighborhood, which has 10,000 people in it. It clicked for Abud in that time, like, hey, it's not just about who I'm sharing the gospel with, but it's about who am I training to share the gospel. That was a massive shift in Abud's just understanding. For me, it's not just equipping my first generation guys in the gospel, it's helping them equip their guys. At the time, we had just a few guys, and within a year, we had about 25 guys. Not just Abud had shared with, but Abud's disciples had shared with. And they were equipped to share, equipped to do discipleship, like to take start taking people through the commands of Christ, and learning to open up the word with them and teach them the word. Our last hurdle was trying to get to church. Multiple times, Abud and I would gather some of his guys together to model for them, how do we meet together for church? How do we do house church? How do we meet in a way that like we can learn the word together and worship and pray and love one another. The problem was we were only able to like gather a few guys at a time, because another issue with Syrian refugees or these Syrian immigrants, they work 14 to 16 hour days. They may get 1 or 2 days off a month and they just have no time to meet. And then they're sharing apartments with maybe 4 or 5 other Syrian refugees or immigrants. None of their roommates are believers. They can't meet in their house. Meeting, they're like, look, we've had so many issues trying to meet together for church, but we actually recently started meeting together a few times without you there. We realize we need to meet together. Mm-hmm. We realize we have to make this a thing. We're struggling because we don't have any time and we don't have a good place to meet. We'll have to find some cafe, and if the weather's good, maybe we can go down to the seaside and meet there. But like, we realize we have to move together. There's never this place where you just arrive and you get to a place where movement just takes off by itself. Always like you're trying to get to the next thing. You're here. What is that next step that your disciples need? Okay, our next big step is, we're almost there, is this, we need these guys to meet in church together, wherever that is, in the cafe, under a tree, if they were able to meet in their home. We prayed about it, like, God, just give us an answer. How are we going to deal with this problem of time? And about 2 or 3 days later, people's pagers for this terrorist organization here just started blowing up. And then the next day, their walkie-talkie started blowing up. Mm. Within a few days after that, we were in an all-out war with Israel. Because of that, a lot of Abed's guys ran back to Syria. A lot of them lived in parts of towns that started having daily airstrikes or were under threat of even more airstrikes. I think our prayer was answered in that moment. Abud was telling me like, hey, we need to take some of these guys who are fleeing from parts of town with the airstrikes and just let's put them in a few homes just for a month or two, keep them alive. And I'm like, great, that is an awesome plan. Let's keep these guys alive. Try to have some of your guys go back to Syria. They need to stay alive. If they can go back to Syria, let them go back to Syria. If not, let's put them in safe houses in parts of town. The hardest thing for me is I'm leaving Lebanon that week. I'm moving out. I'm selling all my things. The country has just descended into all-out war. Some of Abed's key leaders are scattering all over Syria. Some of his other guys are like being put in these safe houses. I remember just thinking, we had almost gotten to church. Like, we had almost gotten to this, like, where, like, these guys are meeting together for church regularly. And I just, like, felt in my heart sad about it. Obviously, God had a bigger plan. And Abud is like, I'm not going to just keep these guys alive. Like, everything I've learned about entering, sharing the gospel, making disciples, planning churches, and leadership development, I'm going to train these guys in those things. I'm going to spend all my time with them. And we're going to have all the time in the world to meet together and be church. During this month or two, Abud's working with these guys and they have all the time in the world because they're no longer working. 5 to 10 guys in each house. He's bringing them food every day. Abud is just like, these are opportunities to train them, to open the word with them, to do deep discipleship with these guys. They also had nothing else to do but just read the Bible. They're doing church every day. They're being trained in how to share the gospel. They're going through the commands of Christ. And then they went through that pretty quick. So they're just reading huge portions of the Bible. So some guys stayed in these safe houses. Some guys actually went back to Syria directly. And all they really knew how to do was to share that they were a believer and maybe share the gospel, share their life story. Since about roughly 2010, 2011, Syria has been a war zone. So this is September, October, and November of 2024 I'm speaking of. The Syrian civil war is still going on. It's less intense than previously. For a lot of these dudes, these Syrian guys, they're of military age. So half of the reason they're in Lebanon is for work, but the other half is if they stay in Syria, they have mandatory military service. And it's not like a 1 or 2 year thing. It is an indefinite period of time. So a lot of them are trying to avoid military conscription. So some of these guys that go back to Syria, they start sharing, like, people are hungry. One guy, he's like, I have shared with 5 guys named Muhammad and 1 guy named Ahmed. And all these guys named Muhammad want to follow Jesus, but I don't know what to do next. Like Abud is receiving calls like this from a few of his guys who already went to Syria. So Abud is like, I need to send the rest of these guys to Syria, and I need to think about how do we train and follow up with these guys who are sharing in Syria. There's been so much war, there's been so much upheaval in Syria that people are extremely hungry for the gospel. One of Abud's key leaders there, his mom was very sick. She was dying of cancer. He's okay to share with people who weren't family members because it's a little safer, you know. It's like I can share with someone who's not a family member. Maybe they get mad at me. They could beat me up. If I share with a family member that and they reject what I share with them, it could cost me my life. It could cost so much more. I could be rejected by the closest people I love. And he worked up the courage to go share with his mother in the hospital. She got angry with him, not because he followed Jesus, but because he had not told her sooner and had told him, why have you not told me this news yet? Because you see what Islam has done to our country. The destruction, the killing. This disciple comes from a part of Syria that 85 to 90% of it lay in ruins. And they're fed up with Islam. They're fed up with war. And she chose to follow Jesus in those last days of her life. I think that story perfectly highlights the hunger and thirst right now. Abud kept calling me. He's like, hey, what do I need to do? Like, I want to go to Syria and I want to follow up with these guys and help train them further. So having a war that scattered all of Abud's guys back into Syria was not in my 2024 goals. And it's just like, we need to follow this up. Like, I need to make sure Abud is ready to go down to Syria if he chooses, and he's ready to follow up and train his disciples. After getting some coaching and getting some insight from different people, the plan was like, hey, I'm going to teach Abud how to train people to train others, which is not a new concept, I know. But for me at the time, I think it was a fairly new concept, and none of Abud's guys were training. So I was like, Abud, our goal is when you go down to Syria, we're hearing people come to faith. We have hardly any leaders. We need to grow in our understanding of how to train trainers as quickly as we possibly can. Model doesn't quite model assist watch lead doesn't translate that well into Arabic, so we call it 150-0. I took Abud and I was like, I'm going to do the first training where I'm going to train people in oikos mat, three circles. You know, we'll go through maybe one of the commands of Christ together, and we'll also talk about a few other tools. I'm going to do 100% for you. And then the next time, we're going to do 50-50. So we found one guy. I did the whole training right in front of Abud. He watched me. The second time, we did 50-50. And then my trip was so short. I was just like, you do the training to me for the third time. I'm not going to help you. I'm just going to listen from you. Like, we did that a few days after that. Within about a week, there's a temporary ceasefire. Syria, the old regime, the Assad regime, fell. And that changed everything. Abud, he went into Syria in one of those first few days after the old regime fell, started following up with these guys, especially he chose just a few provinces to follow up with some of these guys he had trained, led to faith here in Lebanon, and gone back to Syria. He trained them in how to do a training that you could do rather than in a big room. Maybe you're sitting down one-on-one with another disciple, but he would do the same exact thing. He would do the Mall cycle or 150-0 with his guys. He'd be like, okay, the first time we're going to go train someone in some of these basic tools we have that are reproducible, and you're just going to watch everything. And then the second time, it's going to be 50-50. You're going to train them some, I'm going to help you. And then we're going to train another person, and it's going to be all you. I'm going to do nothing. I'm just going to watch you. You're going to do the entire training. And he did that with a few faithful guys. Because of that, this training started to multiply. So we went from just seeing, like, you know, we have some guys who are able to share the gospel to, like, these guys are also able to train. When they train in it, they actually understand the process far better than when they are just merely trained in it. So for me, it's like this metric of how many trainings are we doing is a great metric, but probably the better metric is how many people are training. It's not just the amount of people getting trained. There's still a lot of persecution in Syria, even though it's open. If we do smaller one-on-one trainings, or maybe you're training two or three guys at a time, it doesn't matter. This actually gives a better chance for a trainer to do 150-0 or model assist watch lead with another guy he's trying to train to do these trainings. So Hassan, my teammate James, like he had actually got connected to Hassan. He was like a media contact. He'd had a dream during the wartime. He's from a part of town that was getting airstrikes all the time. He had moved to another part of the Middle East, had a dream of Jesus, got connected to an online ministry, and came back to Lebanon right after the war. James got in touch with him. Pretty soon on, Hassan was really just a faithful dude. He had the vision to share. Hassan over time like experienced a lot of persecution. So unlike Abud, he immediately told his family members, and he got kicked out of his house and was living with some of his disciples, maybe some close friends at times. I think over time he just got exhausted of living this lifestyle of my family's threatening to kill me. I am living from house to house. I've run through my savings and I don't know what to do next. But he actually, with his family, denied Christ so he could move back in. The relationship between him and James got more and more strained. I think Hassan had the vision more. He wanted to travel. He wanted to get out of Lebanon, reach a point of exhaustion. A couple of months there, he just kind of fell off of James's radar. He was denying Jesus to his family, but not telling James that. So a lot of stories he's telling James just aren't adding up. It's like, how does your family just let you back in? How is your family doing this to you if just a week or two ago they were threatening you for following Jesus? Day two of me being back, he's like, I really would love to see you and hang out. Hassan and I met up and he's like, hey, I have to confess to you, I don't share the gospel anymore. I do not read my Bible anymore, but I actually deny Jesus to my family and they think I'm a Muslim again. You know, my heart just broke. And I'm like thinking through the fact what Hassan has gone through is something that would be incredibly hard for me to go through. So I was like, look, man, I have an extra guest room. If you want to stay the night here, one or two nights, go for it. Well, he never really left. I was like, if you're going to stick around for a little while, like, let's just not make this conditional. This is not like you have to be here because you are sharing the gospel. Like, I just wanted to make sure that he has no incentive to lie. He can tell me the truth and it's not going to affect him. Like, it's not going to affect my relationship to him. And at first it kind of felt like pulling teeth, trying to get him to read the word again. But I'm like, but if you're going to stay here with me for a time, you are going to read the word. You know, I read the word every morning and I'd love for you to join that. And slowly but surely he started like growing. And within like a few weeks, he actually starts sharing again and telling me, and it's just like he had a renewed vision. I think one of the biggest things I learned from Hassan during that time is, hey, when your life is falling apart, you're just drowning and it's hard to do anything else. It's hard to do ministry. It's hard to help every single person with every single emergency. But at times, like for our closest disciples, we need to like make sure they know we're there for them. About a month in to just walking with Hassan, his family, they figured out again that he actually had never quit following Jesus. He had never returned to Islam, but he was still following Jesus. So he got re-kicked out of his house. His brother shot at him. And that happens a lot in this culture. Like, it is lawless. Lots of people are on drugs and do crazy things. Hassan's brother shot at him. And he got, again, rejected by his family for a second time. Abud sat with him. He's like, look, man, you told your family so much quicker than I told my family. And when I told my family, like, they tried to kill me, they tied me up, they beat me. I had to run away and escape when I could. I understand what you're going through. And I just want you to know that you need to deny your family if that's what's keeping you from following Jesus. Because that's what the word says. Yeah. And you need to choose to follow Jesus. Everything changed that day. Lebanon in the past year has gone through an incredibly difficult war, especially Hassan's people group. His part of town he's from had so many airstrikes, and everyone knows people who died in the war. Everyone knows people who've lost homes. Everyone like has either been displaced or knows people who are displaced. Like, it caused a lot of upheaval there. And I think a principle that you have to learn about this part of the world is when people think they might die tomorrow, they don't want to just follow any religion. They actually really want to know who God is. And it's just opened up this wide open door again. Hassan shared, he started making disciples. He's incredibly bold. Pretty soon, we got to the same place with Abud, but we got there much quicker. And he had multiple guys who needed training. And I'm like, look, if you're going to reach all of your part of town, you need to make trainers. You need to develop leaders who train And you need to develop trainers who are going to go out and they're going to continue this process of training others to be trainers. One of Hassan's leaders is like, hey, you should meet this one guy, a fifth generation believer in a fifth generation church. And this is over the course of a few months. And he sat down with Hassan and he was able to just share the whole four fields with Hassan with all the tools. He was able to do the training. And Hassan also is like, okay, well, share the three circles with me. Hassan told me that this disciple did it better than he did. Try to pull in some of Abud's leaders from Syria just to see downstream. Click for me with Syria that this same process was working there in Syria when I think it was either a third or fourth generation leader came in and I asked him to describe the four fields to me. But some of the guys that Abud trained him. This idea that we need to find a way that works in the Arabic language, in the Arabic culture, to where we can train people in a way that they go out and train others in these basic tools. Like, this is key. Because otherwise, like, we're never going to keep up with the growth that we have. We need leaders to help lead, manage, and also go pioneer new areas of Syria, of Lebanon. So what I saw in Syria kind of helped reaffirm this concept. But then here in Lebanon with Hassan's work, hearing that within a few months, probably 2 or 3 months, got to fifth generation. And this fifth generation guy was also seeing fruit. So who knows what's going on after that fifth generation. In Syria, there's about 1,000 believers. Most of them are in one province. Probably about 700 are in one province. Yeah. But they're scattered over many provinces. Here in Lebanon, in two different areas, there are about 100 believers through Hassan's network. Again, like, I haven't been able to verify all that with my own eyes due to the security situation. We've tried to get other leaders too to verify some of these things too, just to like make sure it's not just hearing it from one person.
Abu, his wife, has he shared with her yet?
Yeah. So when he shared with his family reacted very poorly to that and were threatening to kill him. And he still had not told his wife at the time. Mm-hmm. So his family is in another part of Lebanon. He comes back to his wife here in Beirut and he keeps telling me, he's like, hey, I need to travel and I need to take my wife with me right now. And he's like, I can find a fake passport. I was like, okay, Abud, first of all, I don't think I can help you travel. Like, I literally do not have the legal means to do that. But I do, if you want to figure out a way to travel, I just want you to get before the Lord and pray. Ask if this desire to travel is from fear or from God. So, and this is all happening on the phone. He's like, I actually think this plan is from Satan. And he hung up. About 2 or 3 hours later, I get a knock on my door. It's about 10:30 at night. I'm like, who is coming by now? Like, open up the door. Abud is there. He comes in. He sits down. It's like, I finally told my wife. And she was so upset at me, she broke my phone. So I couldn't call you about it. They separated for just a short time, but his wife decided to live with them. They actually love each other. They continue living together. And it's been over 2 years. She's still not chosen to follow Jesus, but she's been a lot more open to like hearing the gospel from him. She started to ask him more and more recently, even asked for a Bible. So for the coming year, we want to see, you know, rather than me and Abu just working together, it's more of, he has like a band of guys, of other leaders that are working together, just overseeing the strategy needed for this movement and other things like resources, if there's resources, making sure trainings are happening and pioneering into other provinces. Because our goal is to see churches in all 14 provinces multiplying. Currently, we're at about 10. Abu, he can't do all that work by himself. He needs other guys with him. So that's what we're really trusting on, is maybe even by the end of next year, hopefully other guys would be on shoulder height level with Abu. Here in Lebanon, I feel like things are happening faster than what my mind can comprehend. There's another airstrike, pretty massive airstrike in the city I live in. And a few days ago, a lot of these guys live in areas that there's going to be war. I would love to see this expand, the work going on. And I think it's rapidly multiplying because people are fed up with what's going on. Yeah. People are fed up with the war. They're fed up with a religion that tells them to hate people. They're fed up with a religion that basically doesn't value their lives. The honorable thing to do is to go get martyred in this religion, especially among Shias in Lebanon. Yes. And I think they just want to live. They want to know who God really is, because tomorrow they might be dead. And if they have any doubt in their mind that the God of Islam is not actually God, like if he's not their savior, they want to know who will save them.
What an amazing story of God's grace. If you know someone who would benefit from listening to this podcast and other episodes, then why not reach out to them through leaving a review or putting the message out through social media? It would help us a lot. I'm Steve Addison for the Movements Podcast.